If you use the internet on a daily basis, and chances are you do, you probably don't put much thought into cybersecurity. You know, your network connections, the pages you visit, the files you download. You should be thinking about these all the time. Welcome to And Security for All. Your host is Kim Hakem. We're here to help you understand, in general terms, how and why your cybersecurity should be kept in check. Now, here is Kim Hakem.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to And Security for All. I'm Jonathan Kimmett. I get the pleasure to speak with our guest today. I listened to the podcast last week, and it was a great show. And there's a lot of things that I had questions on. So Kim is generous enough to let me come on and ask some questions of our guest, Matthew Maynard. He is coming on. You guys know him. He was on last week, but today hopefully we'll get into some very specific topics and specific things about what he does and how he does it. Number one, if people are interested in doing it themselves. And number two, to kind of protect against some of this stuff. So Matthew, thank you so much for coming back.
Oh, thank you for having me. Excited to meet you, Jonathan.
Yeah, it's great meeting you. We were talking before the show. You're out of Missouri. I'm here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. My family is from St. Louis, so I've got a little bit of tie back. But I was going to let you know the St. Louis event. I've been to it, and it's a wonderful event. The people are so nice, and so if you get the opportunity, you ought to make sure and get that on your calendar for the FutureCon event, because it really is one of the better events.
Great, yeah, I'll put that on my calendar and look forward to that. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's just jump right into it. I've got lots of questions. Yeah. And I think what we should do is kind of start off. So let me ask you, what really got you started in this? What was that process in your head that you went out, you got onto the dark web, you started looking into this stuff? What kind of pushed you into doing that?
That's a very good question, Jonathan. And I know for me, I can speak as far as topic. It's a crazy line of work to get into. I don't know a lot of people who think about getting into ransomware bounty hunting and dark web research and spending some time in some really awful places. And, you know, as a person who's in InfoSec and have been for a while, I know that the drive has been because, you know, it's 2025, and it just seemed like after a while, we just kind of keep getting that same narrative over and over again. Like, we're reading articles about data breaches and ransomware operators just kind of burning the world around us. And that's the way I put it. And that's what they do. They don't care about anybody. They just care about money and ruining lives. And it just really got tired of just doing the same stuff, you know, protect and that's great and all, but it seemed like there could be more. It's like, you could just be able to try something and do something different. And, you know, when Halcyon put out the bounty program, where it was, you know, the TRIP program for ransomware intelligence, I decided it was something that I was wanting to done before, and I didn't even know if I could do it or not. But I did know that, you know, for change, you know, people have to try and make change. And there has to be somewhere along the line to try something different. And so I just started getting into it because it just seemed like they were winning. It just seemed like we were always falling behind when it came to making these changes and combating them. So I thought the more intelligence and the more I gathered from them and more I learned from them, the more I could share with the community, the more I could help with law enforcement, and maybe one day we would actually not have issues. And the main drive behind a lot of that was, could you just imagine not having to worry about ransomware as much for just one year of just getting through everything and just not having to just put it at the top of your list? It might be like section 4 or 5, but you know, it won't be that big heavy hitter, because we all have that. Like, and it comes to all those talks where it's just, you know, when you hear ransomware, it gets, you get that because of the disruption of the daily backups, the exposure of data and stuff like that. I think after a while, it's just, we've been, you know, drip fed that for so long. It's just, we've made ourselves more afraid of them than they are of us. So it's like, we're constantly afraid. And it's just, that was kind of it. It's like, one day, what if we turn the tables? And that's been my mission. It's a long way to answer.
You know, No, absolutely. No, it's great. Here's the thing. I think that because I deal a lot with the end users, my clients and the organizations I support. And it always seems like we're doing and security, you know, and they have a full-time job. They're doing stuff and they're putting security on top of it. But the attackers don't have that. You know, they get to focus on the attacks or the hacks that they're doing. So, yeah, I can certainly see that. And you're right. You know, I know I went to a DEF CON talk last year and I got really frustrated with the speaker because some of the things that they were talking about, and I don't want to go into details. I don't want to call them out, but the talk itself, the only thing that I was thinking of is we've been doing this the same way for the last 20 years.
Exactly.
Just getting worse and worse and worse. You know, and I'll tell you, when I bring up that issue to someone, and it's like, well, why don't we do this different? And they're like, we can't. We can't do that. We can't change. And I just sit back and it's like, we have to change. So you're absolutely right. I mean, I commend you on this because I think that this is, it's really hard for organizations. It's really hard for people to think differently about this stuff. So, okay. With that said, let's, I want to step back just real quick and say, and ask, a lot of our audience, you know, we have a wide range of skill levels and skill sets in our audience. So talk a little bit about the dark web. You know, a lot of people hear dark web, dark net, they hear clear net, they hear things like that, but give me just a very, very surface layer. What is the dark web? Why is this different than the internet? So those people who may not know the difference can get up to speed on that.
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And, you know, I try and address that every time when I do talk to people about dark web research and everything else, because most people just know the internet. And the drive for that is like, well, it's like, I know what the internet is. I did have one lady, maybe a few years back, but said that she wasn't afraid of the dark web. She went to it all the time. And I was like, well, that's crazy. It's like, well, what do you do? And she's like, well, I just open up my tab and I go in incognito mode and then I'm on the dark web because it was dark. And I had glasses. And I said, all right, you know, that's pretty close. But, you know, you all have when we open up our internet browsers and you can Google, CNN, CBS and stuff like that. And, you know, that's pretty easy. That's a clear web. And the dark web is actually it's run by you use the Tor browser, the Onion router, or, you know, whatever you want to call it to get onto it. And the dark web is a separate entity where I wouldn't say just cyber criminals. It's really, there's a lot of things that go into the dark web, but mostly in this conversation, it's where a lot of the threat actors go. So you basically get through the Onion router, and it's an application you have to install either on your phone or on your computer. And basically you open it up and it routes all the traffic out to these Onion sites. And Onions are just basically just websites that you can get to on the Tor network. And that's where a lot of your criminals go to sell data. They sell drugs. They sell all kinds of things. A couple weeks ago, I found a site that sold a lot of like checks and banking information and stuff. That was pretty interesting there. But anything you could imagine is on that dark web. So I do a differentiation between each one, but I do want to say too, is like whenever you do this dark web research, knowing the difference between two is great too. But one thing that criminals have been doing more and more of is they will actually mirror their Onion site to the clear web. So that way they can get, you know, drive up their numbers for recruitment, but also make it user friendly. So that way when they, you know, punch you in the face and take your money, it's easier for you to know about them or get on their site. So, and they do that as well.
Now, whenever I teach people for the first time, you know, I'll go into a client and I'll use pull the IT team and we'll do training, you know, security training and such. And I'll get them out there on Tor. But I always warn them, you know, there are things out there that you probably don't want to know about. You can never unsee it. I would advise the audience that Tor is just a network. It's just an area where you have websites that you can look at in a browser, the Tor browser. But some of those websites are, I mean, they're not good. So be careful. I rarely discourage people from trying Tor, from going out there, but I always warn them. It's like, hey, you know, be careful. You can get into some spots that you don't want to be in. It is a place, you know, it had the original intent of Tor, I think was a good intent, you know, having that privacy of, go ahead.
Yeah, it was. I'm just going with you.
Yeah, so I mean, the intent is, it's a tool. You know, that's what it is. It's a tool to be used for anonymous or at least more private interaction on a network with other people. And people have taken that maybe to an extreme and done some stuff that they hope they can't be caught in. So that's kind of a very, very basic overview for the audience. You know, it can get really deep, really quick when you start getting into the sites and where to go. But you're absolutely right. I have seen a lot more stuff coming out on ClearNet. You know, that and you know, people talk about dark web versus dark net and a few other things. We won't go into those details here, but there are places out on just the regular internet that you probably don't want to be. So, you know, everyone should keep that in mind. Now, so let me ask you, when you were talking to Kim, you talked about OPSEC. So let me ask you, what are some things that you do when you get onto the Tor network? What do you do to protect your computer and protect the stuff that you're doing for your own privacy?
Well, I will say that everything that I've learned from the bad guys. And that's the truth. I mean, I have certifications and, you know, stuff like that about, you know, a lot of this stuff, but a lot of it that I learned in practice was from them. I mean, it was from being roasted countless times whenever I would get found out or make a mistake. They're very vocal about some of the things. Mr. Cybersecurity is doing this. And then they would just ramble. And the more they'd ramble, the more notes I would take. And the more notes I would take, the better I would get. So I owe them all that because they are fantastic about staying anonymous. So anytime it was just started with the basics. So, you know, doing a lot of this stuff, you have to be, you know, careful about your identity. You have to be careful about a lot of things. So, you know, the first thing I did was I run everything off a flash drive. You know, I downloaded Tails. Tails is a OPSEC operating system, which basically it runs off the RAM, which is random access memory. So you plug it into your laptop, everything boots up. It's got a persistent drive as well as encryption. And everything gets routed through Tor. That's a really big thing. So you just wanted to be able to do all that automatically and have a little bit of security when you're doing it. And so once that boots up, you know, you're going to have to get into a lot of the note taking and information handling. Be taking a lot of screenshots, a lot of notes. A lot of the criminals like to use different tools for communication. Talks, which is an end-to-end application for communication. That one's pretty good. Usually, a lot of the criminals that I talk to, that's what they want to use. And so I'll use another tool, which is known as TorSox, which pushes all my traffic through Tor, so that way it routes everything through it. So, you know, my IP address isn't the same. Sometimes I'll use proxy chain, so that way my IP address changes. The MAC address changes on the laptop as well. But then we get to, you know, the note taking and stuff. You got to have some sort of file share, some sort of drive. So that way, when you take those notes and you zip them together, you have a place to put them. Something encrypted is good too, so that way you have them. Notes are everything. So that way, it's kind of like your, I wouldn't say get out of jail free card, because it just kind of depends how that goes. But the more notes you take, the better. Screenshots, notes. When you're done, zip everything up, put it in some secure drive. You know, how you share information. They use like TempSH, Onion Share. If you're going to send like emails and stuff, you could basically have a separate persona than what you use, like nothing that ties to your personal identity. Onion Mail is really good because, you know, it's just one of those, you send an email and then it's done. Well, it's receiving an email. So that way, when someone wants to send stuff to you, you could do it that way. As far as talking to one-on-one with criminals and stuff and protecting yourself, when you launch Talk, you know, the application I use when I talk to, you know, the cyber criminals and stuff is that's run through TorSox, and your persona has to change. So you have to believe what you want to do. So you have to believe when you start to create this person to talk to somebody, there can't be any room. I mean, you're going to make mistakes, so we'll just say that.
Sure, you have to create
some type of persona of who you are. You're an ex-criminal. You're somebody who's getting into this type of work in the world, and you're into phishing and malware, and you ran with a few crews, and you know certain languages. Be sure that if you do say you do know something, you better know. I did that once or twice and got burned with that one. But then, you know, you kind of stick to that persona each time. So when you talk to one criminal and you want to talk to another one, you have to restart everything all over again. Never reuse the same Tox ID, never use any identity that links back to yourself or your previous persona. And that goes with websites that you use or any type. I don't have an online presence for like Twitter and things like that. I don't have sock puppets and stuff. Most of my stuff is just human driven. It's just me talking to them. And at the end of it all, it's basically having all your contacts and stuff whenever you send your intelligence. And there's always room for improvement. And I never assumed that my workflow was 100% immaculate. And that's, I think, if you believe that, it's kind of, you're just setting yourself up because there's always room for improvement. But I am right now with it. And every day I learn something new. So.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is, you're number one, you're using the same techniques that the criminals are using, the attackers are using, but you're also using these same techniques that people who want privacy. I mean, that's kind of the whole point is really to sanitize your identity so that you can protect who you are, and they're doing the same thing. So again, it's tools, it's the tools that you have. Now, when you are when you're doing this stuff, do you maintain these identities over a period of time? You know, what is your normal time frame or age of these identities? So if you need to start a new identity, how far back do you go, or do you just start it and become that person in terms of the identity? What's your flow there?
A lot of it depends on the situation, because usually when it came to when it was with like the trip bounty program, getting in, getting a bill of intelligence, and then like going to cash out my intel, that was pretty much all it was. But whenever, after a while, bounty programs only pay for so long and things only work, and you just start to realize that there's more to this and you can actually make a really big difference. And that's why I started sticking with it, doing more and more, because that's more fulfilling, is trying to make a difference and increasing these defenses for everybody. But that would only last usually with some stuff. It just depends. So it was like the first time I spoke to, a cyber criminal and was able to get, the locker and the intelligence that they had, it would just take maybe a few days. Some of them will take maybe less than an hour. And then when you're done, then you're on to the next person, because you just cut off after that point because you got everything you need.
Sure.
And then it started to get to where, some of the groups that I was trying to get interested in had a history that they were, targeting hospitals, or they were targeting some, something of interest, children's hospitals or oncology or something with, it was just kind of depend. There was one group that I hung around for 30 days, and that was because, they had said that, you had 30 days to prove, that you basically had to prove that you had, access, and so you could actually provide profit to their group. It's all about money and intelligence. So they said you had 30 days. So I'm like, well, this place is great, because in 30 days it was just, there was so much intel flowing through about the latest locker that they were doing, the latest update, how to the decryption was working, how certain conversations were working with certain companies, the tools they were using, the new tools, the 0 days. I mean, the 30 days was just this big cornucopia of information.
Right.
And that was one of the best times, because then it was like you kept that persona and that, kind of rhythm going until it was basically time to just go, because then it just got into some really dark areas. And I had a lot of information during that time. So you just, like I said, you go back to your workflow, which is document everything, take screenshots, and then you zip it up, and then you start sending it to, whoever you want to send it to in the government and things like that, or whatever you're doing at that time. So it just really depended on situations. Some groups you can just kind of lounge around with forever in that persona, and the new groups are fun because then you can just kind of hang around. Nobody really says anything because they're new. So it varied from group to group.
Sure. How many groups do you think, if you just had to take a guess, medium to large, because I know there's a lot of small groups, there's a lot of new groups, but if you wanted to take a ones that you've seen, how many are out there? I mean, just give the audience a scale of how many groups are we talking about out on the dark net?
15.
Okay.
That I've been with so far.
Right. How do you find them? Do you stumble upon them in terms of the information you find on the dark net, or do you target them specifically?
A very good question. And there are multiple answers. So when I first started, When I first started doing this, I ended up in a group that wasn't even big at all. They were just, they had a post on a dark web forum that I was a part of, and they were just looking for, you know, the same as anything else, just affiliates. And then you had to go through interviews and stuff. And they were my first group, and I got in. As far as I know, it was just the operator at the time. And I think I was one of the first to actually even get into the group. So I got like the locker and then some intel. And then he was using a business application to kind of do business metrics for his World of Destruction. Wow. And, you know, I kind of helped out with that. And then, you know, I can't talk about, we've been working with somebody to try and, you know, gather intelligence to kind of figure out who these guys are, which is really, really hard to do. But they're one of the biggest groups right now. They just, every day, it's like they're just having different types of groups pop every day. I do target some groups, and it depends if they're attacking hospitals. I'm definitely looking around to kind of see if there's anything I can find out. Sure. If there's anything that involves children, I'm definitely looking around to see if I can integrate that. There's some groups I won't touch if they're into like dismantling governments and critical infrastructure, and they come to like some shady things that they're specifically doing. I'm like, I don't want any part of it. I'm out.
Sure.
You know, I'm fragile. I can go to prison. So, right. but you know, stuff like that. And it just depends. And then like ransomware live, ransomware look, they're always up to date with these groups and how they're doing too. I'm a big fan. And then there's other groups that I have a really, really good, time looking for, because those are the new groups and those are very vital. Because I mean, if we look at ransomware groups too, they all came from something. They started out with nobody. They started out maybe two or three people, and they were putting out threads for, you know, getting employees, just like we do. Like, there really isn't a difference between us other than we stay in the light and they stay in the dark, but the practices are the same. They need people, they need a workforce, they even have an HR department, they have a legal team, they've got all this stuff that mirrors our own world. And the new guys are the ones that I have a lot of success with, because they're, you know, they're a little bit more trusting. They don't really know what, you know, what to look for yet. The big groups are great, you know, and I do look for them in a lot of cases too, and do get lucky. But the little guys who are just starting out, I think, is where a lot of this is going to start helping, you know, defenders, because when they start out, they're traded and they sell their code, and then somebody else will buy that code and they'll use it with their group. And if you can get in and get a lot of information from them, or the goal is to get the decryption, so that way we can start being victims, sure. They don't have to pay, and then making ransomware smaller and smaller. So that's the idea. And it would be a lot better. The story I have to that is like the day I met John Wick is what I call him. Yeah, I didn't meet the real John Wick, thank God for that. But he was on a forum, and it was the same thing. Ransomware affiliates wanted, apply, yada, yada, yada. So I did, and we ended up having this week-long conversation, just back and forth. I'll see you tomorrow. I'm having dinner, and then I'll meet you, and we'll talk about X, Y, and Z. And we just had this back and forth going for a little over a week. And through this workflow that, you know, I'm working on right now, a lot of it borders around, you know, tactical empathy, making them feel empowered, trusted. That all has to work in order to get to the end result. And basically through that whole workflow after a whole week, and I still, you know, have all that documented, he ended up giving me his locker, and then I got the instructions for, you know, basically when a victim gets it, it's just that big pop-up, your files are encrypted and stuff like that. I got a video of how the encryptor actually works. At the end of the conversation, he actually trusted me enough to give me the decryptor to it. So I was able to send all that on. That was the first high five moment I'd had in a while. But it's all just about that, just treating them. And I know when you hear that, empathy for your enemies, how can you be empathetic to somebody who, you know, steals your data and burns your business? And it's just, the more and more I started unmasking them and treating them as just people, because they are. And I think in our industry, we always get that big, you know, it's like, beware of the ransomware gangs. They're super intelligent and they're super great. It's like, well, they are what they do, but they are just people. And if you start talking to them just as people and treating them like that, you get a lot further.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's something that we've actually talked about in the industry is, you know, when I go into an IT shop or an organization or whatever, and I ask them, you know, when I say the word hacker, when I say, you know, the word of a someone who does ransomware, what do you think of? And they always have this mindset, this idea of what they'll look like. And it's always, you know, the hoodie on, it's in the dark room and everything. And yeah. Like, no, I mean, these are people, these are, and I'll tell you, this is, it's always funny to me. I think you'll appreciate this. I took a class, this is years ago now. It was a law class and I got into it with the professor. Because in one of the writing assignments or one of the things, it was talking about their these threats out on the internet that there wasn't someone behind. And it's like, no, wait a minute. There's always someone behind those. There might be some tools running automatically for sure, but there's someone behind there. And I think you made a really good point. We really need to understand that person, you know, what they're doing and why they're doing it. I just threw something on LinkedIn a couple of days ago. I think it was a couple of days ago, maybe a day ago. And it was specifically about what is the intent? You know, why are these people doing that? And I wanted to ask you that question. You know, what do you think that intent is? Why are they doing it? And there may be lots of different answers for sure, but what's your thoughts?
Well, I mean, yeah, absolutely. It's a, you know, it's a good question. It's every person. Knew a lot of different areas and how, you know, they specify every person's different. I can say this, there was this, it was the very first group that I was able to get into. You know, I've been back and forth with the threat actor for a while now because they're just so established right now. And he was trusting at first and he's not trusting anymore. And getting in is a nightmare. I just gave up. Right. I monitor and maybe he'll flip up sometime and I do what I can. But during one of our interactions, and you know the quote that he said to me even to this day, and it's kind of my push to everything. I got found out by him one time, and you know, persona was burned, and I'd spent weeks trying to get in, and I was so mad, and I called him everything under the sun, and we just had it out. And then towards the end we just started talking, and I was like, well, this is weird. And then I told them, you know, I'd say, you need to find something else to do. It's like, you're hurting people, you're hurting businesses, and this is just, you're doing awful things. He said, I'm not hurting people, I'm hurting the lack of security controls. And that stuck with me, even today. So I'm like, well, this is just weird. I don't understand why you would do stuff like this. And a lot of it, you know, is all going to be about money. And that's all it's about, is people are either being laid off, or their jobs are being affected, or they come from poor regions, or all they ever know is crime, and that's why they do it. Some people just want to watch the world burn. I do know that specifically with a few groups, they just seem like. I did have one moment where I said, "Well, this is interesting. You're more like a prisoner rather than somebody who's being an employee." And it was, you know, like I said, back to the first one, it was their group, and he'd said that. You know, if you wanted to be a developer for their group, and developer, we mean the people who are developing the locker, the encryptor malware. And in order to work for him, you'd have to a certain country and you would have to hand over your passport. And they would give you a fake passport to work off of. And then you would have to have a psychiatric evaluation from a member of their team, which would be great news. And then they would basically welcome you into team. So at that point, if you were just somebody who was just, you know, you knew somebody or you were down on your luck and you're wanting to just develop some stuff and then maybe just, you know, jog on after you make your $1 million or whatever they make, you're a prisoner because they have your passport and you can't get out. So you're still guilty for what you're doing and stuff. But at that point, you can't get out at all. So there's so many answers to it, but I think a lot of it's just driven by money, opportunity, and just, you know, maybe you've just been in a life of crime for a long time.
Well, and I think that's, you know, this is not new stuff. I mean, this is the type of thing that we have seen in human society for thousands of years. You know, you have people that, you know, kind of, they go down what most people would say unethical or bad or evil or whatever the word you want to use. They go and they do those things, and it's usually because, well, like you said, they're doing it for money, maybe for power. Maybe they do want to just see things burn. They just like destruction. I think the only difference is the people who are doing it from the cybersecurity perspective, they have much greater reach. And to an extent they have, bigger impacts, you know, you get in with a user account to a hospital and you shut that hospital down. That's a huge impact and people are going to know it and see it. And there, you know, there is that fame or the notoriety at least from doing that and possibly a lot of money, you know, if they pay the ransom or, you know, otherwise. So, but you know, one of the things I try to get across people is the mindset that people have for this. This is not new. This has been around. You know, ransomware as a concept has been around, you know, for much longer than computers have been around. You know, it's protection money. You know, if you don't give us money, we'll break your kneecaps type thing. So, you know, those sorts of things are. Yeah, this is human nature to some extent. So, well, you know, that's really interesting that, you know, what you've seen in terms of the people side. I think a lot of people don't really understand that. They still think of this as we put a firewall in place and we're done. We have MFA and we're done. And it's not like that. You still have a human being on the other side that their job, you know, in the case of the individual that was trapped, that's what he does is he gets into the organization or he builds the code or whatever part he is in, whatever he does. So what would you think, you know, if we started thinking differently, if organizations started looking at this from a people perspective, you know, you have these people, individuals who are doing these things, what do you think that would change in terms of how we implement security controls or how we think about security?
Well, you know, I think, like I said, it's just that, you know, learning the human nature of, you know, threat actors, and it's not something like I'm, you know, an expert on at all. I just know doing this venture right here, I've learned a lot about, you know, how they think and how they feel about some things. And I know that sounds crazy, but it's one of the most beneficial, you know, journeys I've had so far to hear, you know, a ransom operator talk about some things and, you know, how it feels towards security. And I can say, you know, from the human side of it all, most of them that I talked to, there was one group that were new, you know, same type of situation again, looking for, you know, recruits and stuff. And so I joined and then they were talking about work that they were doing. And I know in one of those cases, it was my first insider threat case that I'd ever had. And it was just, at first I just thought it was just going to be just your typical new group ransomware and stuff like that. And I was just going to do the same workflow, but it ended up being an insider case where this particular person who worked for very long had somehow reached out to this ransomware group and was wanting to sell his data and all these secrets that the company had. He had all the information on CEO and all these really sensitive data. And I think once I started getting into all that, I zipped all that up and I sent it away immediately. And of course it was during the government shutdown. So I don't know where it went. So I'm hoping it reached the right people, but it was just this huge problem. And hanging on a little bit into the group and just waiting to see if I could get more intel on it. And the reason why the person was wanting to give all this stuff away was because he was being laid off. And he was just wanting to get rid of everything and make money. Sure. And, you know, it's like, as far as like the human side goes with that, you know, they teach more and more about it. And that's one thing I think we need to looking at as an industry is we'll just use phishing as an example. You know, it's great. It works. You know, every group has some sort of person who's into like fraud or phishing, and he's in, you know, you've got your people who fish, and you've got your malware developers, and you've got pen testers and everybody else in this group that forms a ransomware group. And for us, when we do, you know, phishing education, it's that check mark at the end of the year. It's like, do you do phishing audits? Yes, we do. We do phishing training and everything else. Don't click on links. Don't scan QR codes. You know how it goes. And we stick to that every year. And when it happens, it's like, well, we do our audits every year. You get your applause and then you check off your stuff and you're done for the year. And then whenever it comes time to somebody clicks on something, you get the education. It's like, don't click on anything. Don't do that. What's wrong with you? and we're getting better at it. But then, you know, when we start doing our, you know, enrollments and we start doing all these little events and stuff that go on internally, we send out emails with links and attachments and QR codes, and we say, scan them, click them. It's like, it's from us. And it's like, well, okay, sure, no problem. But we expect change, but then we don't change ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I run into that a lot. You know, all my organizations run into that particular issue. And we do something a little different. You know, we do extortion testing, and ooh, people get really upset when you do extortion testing. Well, so think of it like this. I was doing a bank audit. I'm going to step back and tell you kind of where this started from. I was doing a bank audit one day, and when I do my bank audits, I go in and I, you know, we do the normal, you know, here's a list of things, mm-hmm, we're going to check and have you verify and validate and all this normal stuff. And I go a little bit deeper just because of my background and what I do. But one of the things, mm-hmm, that I do is I go around and I interview random employees, and I ask them, you know, what do you remember from your security awareness training? Oh, if you're in this situation, what are you going to do? I usually ask them two or three questions like that. And then I compare all the answers and say, okay, yeah, people are aware and whatever. Well, I was going around and I was talking to people. And then I went into the CEO's office. It was the CEO and the CTO, CIO, one of them. I don't remember which now. It's a long time ago. And I sat down and I was like, hey, your teller window, the young woman up at the teller window, do you trust her? And they're like, well, sure. I was like, okay. If I walked up there and handed her $15,000 in cash, would she give me her password? And the CEO says, absolutely not. They would never do that. And the CIO is like, yeah, probably. It's like, okay, so that's a problem. Let's talk about it. Let's do a risk assessment real quick. But the extortion testing is like that. You know, for some employees, you know, there is this mindset of if they're at a certain level in terms of risk, you know, the kind of data they have access, the systems they have access to, you probably do need to test them and check to make sure that, you know, what is that threshold of, you know, I'll give you $60,000 for your password for 30 minutes. I'll give you $100,000. But people get really upset over it. And they're like, you can't do that. That will lose trust of our staff. It's like, well, I understand that, but do you trust them in the first place? You know, certain positions, certain access, certain data, you really have to make sure you have those people. But, you know, thinking about what you said about the disgruntled workers, we have a lot of people that are afraid of layoffs right now. We have a lot of people that have been laid off. I was working with a group not too long ago, and they told me flat out they had already been laid off. Their last day was like 30 days from now. And I was working with them doing an engagement, and I'm like, wow, you guys, you know, you're being laid off and you're here helping. I mean, I appreciated it. Nice group. They worked really hard. I had a great time, you know, doing the audit with them. But, you know, that sort of thing you got to think about from a risk level is, okay, well, now these people are vulnerable, and maybe they do go sell their credentials online for, you know, X amount of money, and that gets them in through MFA, that gets this. It's, I mean, all these things. And how many people do we have right now like that? I mean, you're talking about the people who were during the government shutdown. We've got a Discord channel for here in Oklahoma of all the cybersecurity professionals. They have 300 or so people on there. And it's just a group that we can get together and talk. And we had several people that had gotten, you know, during the shutdown, they didn't have anything to do. They couldn't do anything. And, you know, we checked in on them, made sure that they were doing okay and, you know, whatever, but I kind of felt bad for them because they didn't know, they didn't know they were going to be able to come back. Mortgages and they had all these things. But think about if you have all that skill set, all those technical people that came out that didn't have jobs, they could go out and get on the dark net and find, I was like, hey, yeah, here's some credentials, you know, give me, I don't know what they go for nowadays. But I mean, it's really scary.
Yeah.
I mean,
go
ahead.
Oh, the piggyback off that same conversation. And we were talking about phishing and the the person who was, you know, the insider for this company, you know, he was talking to the group about delivering some sort of Trojans that would just sit on the network, you know, just kind of gather intelligence and stuff. So that way the next attack would be a little bit easier as far as like what, you know, what basically what the, and the idea was to send a phishing email to a person that he was wanting. So it was like he knew a person that he was wanting the email to go to. And they're going to send him on. Who's going to send an email address to send that person that email? And then he was going to like coax them or some. His idea, what he was going to do, I had no idea. But it got me thinking a little bit more too, because in that realm, it was just, you know, when somebody clicks an email, it's like, oh, this is somebody else who had actually set that up from the inside was going to that person. So it was like you would think that the one person who clicked on it was to blame, but it was actually somebody else who was orchestrating it from within the company. It was interesting.
Well, and we had a case maybe 4 or 5 years ago now. A large organization here in Oklahoma was down. They were hard down ransomware. And we did the investigation. I was not involved. I was kind of advising, you know, the guy I was working with. And we truly believed that it was intentional. We couldn't prove it. But what we think happened, and I actually use this now as my training when I do training and stuff out there, is imagine this: a disgruntled worker comes in, they're mad at something, whatever it may be. So what have we always taught them to do in security awareness training? Don't click the links. So they were mad enough that they went out, they found an email in their personal email that had malicious link in it, and they clicked it, and then they went through. Now, you can't prove attribution on that. You can't prove that they did it intentionally. They could have just been, oops, sorry, I clicked the link. But how do you protect the organization from intentional? I mean, we're teaching them how to hurt the organization by doing security awareness training. We say, don't click the link. Well, if you have someone who's intent on doing it, they click the link. So now you go one step further where instead of someone just doing it out of emotion, they're mad. Now they are planning what you just said. They're planning that attack of reaching out to the attackers and say, hey, email this person, do this. And then all this stuff will happen. That gets really dangerous for the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's I think that's something that it's really hard to get across to the leadership because that's just hard to think about. It's hard to wrap your mind around. I mean, you have an advantage because you get to see it on both sides. You get to see it at your work, you know, the defending side. Then you get to see it on the stuff you see on the dark web. That's a really good question. What does your work think about this? You being out there, I mean, the information you're pulling, I'm sure that is certainly helping the controls you can implement in the hospital. But what is it? What do they think about that? And it looks like we've only got about 2 minutes left, so we got plenty of time to get through this.
So, like I said before, you know, the work I do is separate. You know, I bring intelligence and stuff in to kind of work on things like that, but they're not involved in the stuff that I do. But I do know, you know, people I do work with and stuff who do know about all the stuff that I do.
Sure.
Are proud and supportive of the stuff that I do because it's different, it's unique, and you know, the more I learn from them, the more I can help, you know, with us as far as, you know, defense when it comes to all these different things. But it's been very positive.
Well, that's great. And I'm glad for that because I think if I can get my clients, you know, all my organizations that I deal with to get more involved and receptive to threat intel, you know, wherever it may come from, it just helps you make better decisions. You know, that's the key factors. If you can make better decisions, the organization is more protected.
So Sun Tzu said that best, like you have to know your enemy. So if you're going to fight, you got to know who they are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Matthew, this has been great. I was really excited when Kim had sent me an email saying that we were going to have you back. And if I wanted to come in, and I just jumped on the chance because I was really excited to talk with you. And I'd like to ask you some more questions at some point. I'll catch you on LinkedIn or something. You know, I'd love to maybe come up to Missouri and take you to lunch or something and pick your brain on stuff. Absolutely. Because you've got a lot of experience that I think a lot of people could get some value out of. So, thank you again for coming back to AntSecurity for all. This has been wonderful. I know that the audience is, I'm sure that they've picked some pieces out of this that they're going to immediately go into the internet and start searching how to defend against this. I mean, this is great information.
Thank you very much.
Yep, absolutely. So with that, I think our time is over. So thank you everyone for joining us today for And Security for All with Matthew and with myself. We had a great time, great topic. This is going to be the stuff you truly need to think about in your organizations to make better decisions. Okay. So until next time, I hope you have a great Thanksgiving coming up at the end of the week. And I hope we get to talk soon.
Yep.